I'd like to introduce today's first presenter, Jeff Fisher. Jeff, you now have the floor.
Thanks, Rob. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whether you're joining us live today for this event or viewing it through a recording. We really appreciate you coming out to our Azure Hands-On event that's been produced in conjunction with Microsoft. My name's Jeff Fisher. I'm VP of Strategic Alliances at Kemp Technologies, joined by my colleague, Kurt Young, who's also a member of the Alliances team. And we're really looking forward to taking you through an overview of Kemp, our virtual Loadmaster solution for Azure, and then getting really hands-on in the lab and showing you the power and capability that the solution has. So before we get started, just a quick look at the agenda. We'll talk about sort of the genesis of this hands-on lab and the work that we've been doing with Microsoft over the past several months. I'll take you through a brief overview of Kemp if you've never heard of us before, a little bit about how we got started in Azure and the significant momentum that we've been seeing over the past 12 months. Talk about the solution from a high level and how we add value to some of the core capabilities in Azure networking. Give you a brief overview of our customer research talk about some common use cases as well. Before touching briefly on a solution that we've developed really about through our engagement with Microsoft and some larger enterprise customers around mass workload migration. So companies and organizations that are looking at transitioning dozens or hundreds of applications from their on-prem current environment to Azure. We'll hand it over to Kurt. He'll take you through the lab give you some great hands-on exposure to the solution, and then we'll close up with some next steps. So just briefly, we've been working with Microsoft now for about 6 months on this superhuman effort, really sort of the beginnings of where this lab came from to generate some additional interest in Azure, and it's been great. We've seen a great response to it. We've seen lots of interest in both existing Kemp customers looking to move to Azure, as well as new customers who may have not known of us before, and really are starting to understand the need for a comprehensive application delivery solution within Azure. So it's great to be at this point now where we can take a smaller group of you folks through a more in-depth look at the product and what it's capable of. And we hope that this will be just the beginning of an engagement that you'll have with our company around your Azure solutions. So for those of you who may not be familiar with Kemp, we are a leader in the application delivery space. We've been in business now for about 16 years. We produce a line of what some refer to as ADCs. Others think of them still as load balancers, and even others talk about them as reverse proxies. But it's the Loadmaster family, the gold boxes, for those of you who are familiar with our hardware appliances. And we've had a strong presence front-ending Microsoft workloads like SharePoint, IIS, ADFS, et cetera, now for a long time, certainly before Azure even existed. We were honored last year to be included as the only visionary in the Gartner Magic Quadrant for ADCs. At the bottom there, you can see we're not new to Azure. We were a very early participant in the Azure ecosystem, putting our first ADC or virtual instance of an ADC into the Azure cloud way back in 2013, front and center as the first certified ADC solution when the marketplace opened up in 2014. And today we're a top 10 Azure Marketplace solution with about 250,000 hours of usage a month. So we're really seeing substantial adoption and some great use cases that customers are using to leverage Virtual Loadmaster for. Just a high-level overview, again, of what the solution is. It's essentially an advanced layer 4-7 load balancing and content switching solution. And it really provides some advanced functionality for application and service delivery for folks who are doing more complex things within Azure, more complex application and service delivery. And you'll see, as Kurt will talk about it through the lab portion, when you start mixing and matching different tiers within a web application and add PaaS services and multiple tiers of VMs, whether they're .NET applications or others, you start to run into some challenges in terms of how to provide a seamless end-user experience, a secure experience, and a scalable experience. So what our solution essentially does is it provides all of the features that you need for application delivery within one single appliance solution, very intuitive user interface, really not necessary to get into all kinds of advanced scripting and learning some very advanced capabilities from that perspective. It's all tightly wound into a multi-purposed appliance. Important security solutions, obviously, from an SSL perspective, but also adding capabilities in terms of SSL certificate management, having that be centralized, being able to do re-encryption and some other things that some of the native application functionality within Azure doesn't support. We also add a WAF into that, which is obviously critically important for applications and services that are being published on the public internet, which many are in the case of Azure. We also bring our reverse proxy functionality and other edge security functions, pre-authentication. We bring that all to bear within Azure. And then last but not least, scalability. We support throughputs from 20 megabits through our free offering, which is a great way to get started on the solution. And then all the way up to 10 gigabits, which is the highest level of throughput supported by a third party in Azure today. We make it very easy to scale up or down through lots of flexible licensing options. So we support BYOL, we support hourly SKUs. We'll also talk to you today a little bit about something that we call metered licensing, which is bringing a whole new set of capabilities to Azure Cloud. And then really what that does is it helps people get started, get comfortable with the solution, and then be able to grow their environment as they need. So just to be clear, because for those of you who are familiar with Azure networking, you'll know that Azure has a built-in load balancer. It's got the traffic manager for doing global site load balancing, as well as application gateway for doing some SSL functions. And some basic URL rewriting. So essentially, our solution extends and enhances Azure application delivery. We work in conjunction, in fact, with certain elements of Azure networking. And you know, try to make it extremely clear through content like this, and we've got more detailed content on our website, exactly what features that we provide that are not native to Azure. The response that we've gotten from the technical sellers at Microsoft has been great. You know, cloud solution architects and others who live and breathe Azure deployments really are starting to understand that as, again, these deployments get more complex, requirements become more challenging, Kemp is really there to help support Azure networking capabilities and the Microsoft team. So again, three kind of categories here: optimizing deployments, whether that's through our application templates that make it very easy to deploy common Microsoft applications like SharePoint, ADFS, some advanced capability around health checking. We also support high availability configurations today, and that does also work in conjunction with the Azure Load Balancer. Enhanced user experience through, again, throughputs up to 10 gigabits, session persistence for sticky applications, e-commerce, and other types of transactional applications where it's critically important to maintain user sessions, caching and compression. And then, as I've touched on briefly, on the security side, a built-in WAF that we support, as well as client authentication and the ability to basically block intrusions and so on and so forth. So customer success, this is a great case. A company called the Unigo Group, they're actually local here to Seattle, and they use us for a content switching use case, which is exactly what Kurt's going to go into today. And in fact, Rudy from Unigo is going to be on an Infopedia with us in early June, and he's going to tell his story. So I certainly encourage you to join us for that event. We're really looking forward to it. He tells it, you know, better than anyone. Obviously, he deployed it, and really has a charismatic way about it. But essentially, what they're doing here was they had multiple tiers of their web assets, different websites, different CMSs, content management solutions, and they really wanted to tie it all together through a single URL for their customers. Well, that's only really possible through advanced content switching and URL redirection, as Kurt will demo to you a little bit later on. Rudy found us through the marketplace, deployed it, and has been using us now probably for about a year and a half. So that's really a great, great story for Kemp. Just briefly on the topic of Azure customer research, and I guess it's a good time to reiterate the fact that there is a poll that we've got published. Rob put it up there for you. You may have to scroll down on your screen to see it. It might be at the bottom. And we would love to get your feedback on the types of applications that you're looking to load balance within Azure. What we found by polling about 50 of our customers at the end of last year was that the top applications really around Azure Web Apps, IIS, again, with multiple tiers, whether different VMs that they're using on the back end or PaaS services. An interesting number of folks using ADFS, and I think that really sort of points to a hybrid use case or the hybrid scenarios that I'll touch on briefly. Certainly some people doing some interesting stuff around CMS in relation to that. Unified communications has always been a strong area for us. We have people testing migrations to new versions, but also doing production UC deployments within Azure, as well as some interesting use cases around RDS. And then on the right there, you can see some of the critical features that they told us, again, with the layer 7 load balancing and health checking being at the top, but SSL being critical, content switching, reverse proxy, and then finally Geo. So just a broad overview of some of the use cases here. I know we're going to get very specific on the content switching piece, but that's just really a small part of the solution. It happens to be one that we're seeing a lot of traction with, so we thought it was worthwhile to get into the details. But as you can see here, there's lots of other ways that you can use LoadMaster in conjunction with Azure deployments. And those are deployments that are both fully 100% in the Azure public cloud or hybrid deployments between your prem and the Azure public cloud. So we'll walk through some of these. These are all available on our website at chemtechnologies.com/Azure. So again, some very interesting hybrid use cases, a lot around directory services and authentication, people who want to be able to fail over their AD to Azure to make sure, for example, that single sign-on is always working for Office 365, even if the local prem goes down for some reason. Custom web applications for doing some basic cloud bursting or even DR and business continuity scenarios. GSLB, again, for folks who have more advanced functionality than Traffic Manager can support, we're seeing folks who are putting instances of LoadMaster into the different Azure regions, either within one country in the US or globally. And that does give you an extra level of control, especially when it's done in conjunction with on-prem virtual LoadMasters or hardware appliances. So really depending on your level of complexity and the complexity of your environment, this can be a great solution as well. Security is top of mind, obviously, within public cloud, and we bring a lot of capabilities to bear, whether it's the wide range of client authentication methods, reverse proxy capabilities, and again, as we've been talking about, the WAF, which, in fact, today Kurt will give you a preview of as part of the demo, assuming we have enough time, which we hope hopefully will. And then last but not least, the content switching use case. And again, that's really about aggregating multiple application front ends into this unified experience. So users aren't seeing multiple domain names, and they're not getting confused. Their browsers aren't getting confused and blocking things unnecessarily. We'll get into the details of that shortly. So just one last thing to touch on, again, for those of you who are on today and joining, who are really looking at doing what we would consider mass workload migration. So obviously, there are lots of folks who are using leveraging Azure as a platform for a new application, or for an application maybe that's being refactored, that they're retiring from their prem and putting into Azure. But we also are now seeing, through our engagement with Microsoft, a fair number of customers who want to move, again, dozens or in certain cases even hundreds of applications from their premises to the Azure public cloud. And in fact, there was an opportunity that we worked on last year with that was brought to us by a cloud solution architect, large enterprise that you'd know, they basically made the decision to migrate literally hundreds of on-prem applications. You can see the range here of custom .NET applications, some stuff running on Apache, lots of SharePoint. And the challenge is that each essentially domain name or IP or cloud service that represents those applications needs its own load balancing instances. In their current on-prem configuration, they're using some large traditional hardware load balancers. And so they essentially configure all of the VIPs or the virtual services within those that pair of load balancers. Everything works great. But when they are moving this architecture to Azure, they basically realize that they'd have to have that functionality on a per application basis. And that really created some substantial cost and management blockers for traditional ADC solutions. So what we did essentially at Kemp, we were already in the process of bringing our Kemp 360 solution, which is our centralized management, orchestration, and licensing solution to market. And we essentially saw this need. We wanted to help this customer. And we created essentially a metered application delivery solution for Azure. And what that does and what that allows customers to do is essentially deploy as many instances as of Virtual Load Master for Azure as they need, but be able to license them through Kemp 360 metered licensing. And that means essentially the customer, you, are only paying for what you use. We measure throughput, we measure TPS, and we set up a monthly payment model that looks at your peak usage over a 30-day period, and you get charged for that. We also have built-in burst protection, and we have some grace periods to make sure that, like that cell phone bill that everybody hates to get, you're not in that situation. We really give you some good heads up as to the growth in your usage. And this has been tremendous because, again, trying to license and manage these instances on an individualized basis is extremely challenging.
Another thing about that is also doing the chargebacks to the business units. So if you have all these applications that are throughout your organization, you can use this metered licensing to do chargebacks to those business units.
So. 100%, which is a great. I mean, this is actually a company we were working with a division, but this is an example of a company, a global player, who's got multiple business units, and their IT, their central IT department, could deploy this and then basically say, hey, business unit A, you owe us X, business unit Y, you owe us so much, and so forth. So yeah, great point. Yeah. So that's all from me. Again, if you've got questions or want to learn more, certainly feel free to put some questions into the queue. Now that I'm done with my piece, I'll be taking a look at that and answering them as best I can. We're certainly happy to have a more in-depth conversation with you after. But at this point, I'll turn it over to Kurt.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. So what I'd like to do is just kind of set the stage for the lab that we're going to go through, starting off with the onboarding overview. So last week we took a number of attendees through kind of setting up the basis for our lab, spinning up a virtual load master, licensing that load master, and then spinning up a couple app services, one that's just a generic web app and another one that is a Java application. So the idea is we're going to use those two app services, and we're going to do some content switching to kind of bring them all under one URL, as you saw in Jeff's in the Unigo case. So after that, we're going to get into the LoadMaster. We have just a few prereqs that we have to go through to make sure that the solution is going to work. So we want to make sure that we cover them. We'll create an endpoint in Azure for our LoadMaster to open up port 443. We'll be doing some SSL. And then we'll get into working on that worksheet that hopefully everyone that's going to be going through this lab with me will kind of build out that worksheet. And we'll be using that to create some of the content rules and virtual services and things like that. And then once we create those virtual services, now a virtual service on the LoadMaster is really the virtual IP address. It's the listener that the clients are going to connect to. They'll connect to the LoadMaster. Since we're going over port 443, we're going to decrypt that traffic to see where that client is going, and then use our content rules to route that traffic and even modify some of the headers during that. So once we get all that working, we're going to, as Jeff said, hopefully we have time to get into our web application firewall. Also in that download, we created a config file, and we'll be looking at kind of WAF in just a little bit of a different way than maybe you you normally would think of the web application firewall. So first, let's jump in and kind of take a look at the environment that we had spun up last week. So if I jump onto in Azure, the first thing we want to do is go into our virtual machines. I have a few different virtual machines here, but the one that we want to focus on is the Kemp LM11. This is the LoadMaster that we spun up last week. And we have a DNS name here, kempLM11.cloudapp.net. This is the URL we're going to use to access our applications. So this could really be any URL, apps.kemptechnologies.com or whatever URL you want to use. And again, we're going to be going over 443. And for this lab environment, we're not going to be uploading a certificate, but we'll look at that and how that's done on the LoadMaster. Because obviously, with this kind of lab environment, we can't have everyone, requiring to purchase SSL certificates and things like that. So we'll just be using a generic SSL certificate that comes with the LoadMaster and do it that way. So actually, while we're in here, we'll do a few things. First thing is I'm going to copy this URL, the Kemp LM11, and that worksheet that hopefully everyone that's going to be walking through this lab downloaded, we're just going to go ahead and paste that in the LoadMaster URL box. And then that's also going to get copied down to one of our content rules down here, the replace header name. And we'll get into what all those rules do a little bit later on. Also, while we're in here, we can go ahead and create that endpoint. So over here in endpoints, we have two endpoints that were created during the creation of this LoadMaster automatically for SSH and also for our management, for our web user interface, port 8443. So let's go ahead and create a new one. And we'll just call it SSL. This will allow that traffic to go from the internet to the LoadMaster. And the public port and private port will be the same. And assuming you have all good green check marks, we'll go ahead and click OK, and we'll let that endpoint get created. And while that's creating, we're going to go take a look at our app services. So these are the two app services that we created last week as well. We have the Kemp Web, and I put a number in there as we discussed last week to make it kind of, unique, as each one needs to be unique. And if I go into this web, again, we have this URL, which is the Kemp Web 1143.azurewebsites.net. I'm going to copy this URL, go back to our worksheet, and for our web app, I will go ahead and paste that in there. I don't need the HTTP though. We'll just go ahead and put it in there as that. And once again, that got copied down to our content rule. And go back to app services, and we'll take a look at that Java app as well.
And I think it's worth noting that these applications that Kurt's using are actually PaaS services. So there's sort of a preconceived notion that when you're dealing with load balancing, because of the traditional on-prem world, that you're somehow load balancing only virtual machines, right? In this case, the loadmaster is actually doing intelligent traffic delivery, or will be when we get done with the lab, to platform as a service applications. There are no VMs in the back end.
Right, and there could be. I mean, you could you could have a combination of the PaaS and some IaaS VMs if your solution requires that. Also want to mention on top of that is that, you know, these are just two, and we use them for the lab because there's actually a free offering for these web apps. But as Jeff was talking before with the Unigo solution, some CMS, or really, I mean, the amount of offerings, PaaS offerings in Azure are endless, right? So, you know, you can have any combination, right? So it's not obviously just limited to these two. Right?
Exactly.
So we go ahead and we added that Java. And now, while we're doing this, we might as well go ahead and get some IP addresses. So I'm just going to open up a command prompt. And I'm going to ping kempweb1143.azurewebsites.net. And I'm also going to ping kempjava1143.azurewebsites.net. Whoops. Okay, that's better. So what we're going to do is we're going to record these IP addresses that we'll use in our configuration. So let me go ahead and copy these over here. So for our web, we have 137.135.107.235. And for Java, we have 104.40.192.107. So now our worksheet is complete, and we can, you know, we're going to keep referencing this back as we go through the lab environment.
Great.
Just one more cross check here to make sure with the wrong IPs things are not going to go up. Actually,
yeah.
I did find an error here.
And maybe we'll maximize that, and we'll just take a brief pause to let folks who are following along here
absolutely yeah.
Have some time.
Okay, so here's the worksheet completely filled out. The endpoint here, we've already created this, so we're done with that piece. And again, these pieces here, the loadmaster and the web app and Java app URL and IP addresses will be used throughout the configuration of the loadmaster.
Yep. And essentially, I mean, Kurt took the time to make this spreadsheet to avoid the fat fingering challenges, right? So it's not like he likes to sit up at night and design Excel spreadsheets that manipulate data points here in your network. But again, it's really critically important because if you put in a wrong value within your rule, then it's just not going to work.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. And again, I like doing this when I'm creating these kind of rules because these are very simple. I mean, it's all based on regular expression, but so you can get really creative with some of these content rules. So, you know, you really want to have them, you know, a lot easier to copy paste than go through and try to write them off the cuff, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
And even from a reference and a backup perspective operationally, you put this into production. I know Rudy, for example, has got lots of them.
Yeah.
It's good to have a hard copy and to version it so that if people need to do maintenance, someone else in your organization is a reference point to know exactly what the rules are supposed to look like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So we have the majority of the information and configuration that we need in the portal. So if we jump over to the loadmaster Kemp LM11. For those of you that aren't familiar with Kemp, this is our web user interface. Again, as we start clicking through it, you'll see it's very intuitive, very easy to use, and that's really always been how we base this. I mean, our customers love the ease of use of this appliance. And whether you're running our hardware, whether you're running a virtual on-prem, whether you're running it in the cloud, or whether you're running it on bare metal, it's the same interface across all of them. So you won't have any changes there, which is obviously very nice when you you don't need to shift gears to
exactly.
say, okay, what...
And the other other critical piece here, again, is if you're using more than one area of capability within Azure or even traditional environments, meaning that you're doing some content switching with some security, like we'll hopefully get into today, it's all through the single UI, right? I mean, obviously there are different subsections, but administrators really like knowing, hey, I need to make some sort of modification or do some work in the area of my application delivery, I can go to one place. I don't have to script something, you know, with one tool here and go to another section of the configuration here. And especially not everyone on the planet is an application delivery networking specialist, right? So this just really makes it very, very easy for administrators.
Yep. So one thing that we referenced in where, that slide where we're kind of saying the stage is some of the prereqs. So there's really, honestly, only one that we need to worry about. If we go down to the system configuration and under miscellaneous options, we have this network options here. And one of the things that we have to enable is this option here, is to enable non-local real servers. And just kind of explain that a little bit. Since we're using the public IP addresses that are given to us by default, for the web apps, since we're using the free version of those web apps, we don't have any option to connect them to a VNet or anything like that to get a private. We have to enable this so we can actually add IP addresses that are outside of the network that the loadmaster is in. Because by default, without that checkbox, you could only add what we were calling real servers. And it's kind of you know, funny because we're not, you know, typically when you're load balancing Exchange or Skype for Business or SharePoint or any web application, we're load balancing multiple real servers. And that's where the concept of real servers comes into play, and it's very easy to understand. In PaaS, you know, we're using the concept of real servers, but there really isn't a real, you know, a real server there. We're actually just hitting a service. So, you know, again, it's just a name, but that's really what we're using in the configuration.
Yeah, and just a couple points to add on that. We have actually made some modifications to the product recently. I don't know whether those came out in .34 today or I think they did in our latest release, where you can actually now use domain names instead of IP addresses. That was very much heavily influenced by the usage of PaaS services, which people don't want to. You don't want to use the IP address of a PaaS service because Microsoft may change that IP address, and then your system's going to stop working. And I think this is also a great time to emphasize the re-encryption. To be able to do, to decrypt SSL traffic, look to see where it needs to go, and then to re-encrypt it for, especially for more regulated industries and use cases where that end-to-end security is an absolute must.
Right.
And we've got that capability as well.
Yeah, going back to the changing of the IP addresses. Now, I know I've had many conversations with Rudy, and he's been running it for, like you said, like a year and a half, and that IP address has never changed. But you know, the possibility, we've also talked to other customers that actually have scripts, and they're using, because we have an API and a PowerShell wrapper for the LoadMaster. So this is, again, our nice web user interface, but you could also do PowerShell and things like that. So they actually set up a script to monitor and make sure that the URL and IP address were the same. In the event that they didn't match, then they kicked off another script which would connect into the LoadMaster and re-IP those real servers. So that was kind of an interesting workaround. But again, having the power of the PowerShell, you know, you can do that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So very, very cool stuff. So we checked that box. So we're all set there. Now with the certificates, this is where you can go ahead and manage your SSL certificates. Again, we're going to do SSL, but we're not going to import a certificate. But if you needed to, you could see how simple it is just to import. You select the PAM or PFX that you want to use and just go ahead and save it and import it right in there. And then you can just kind of drag it over, and you'll see that when we start going through the creation of the virtual service. So real easy to manage the certificates in this way. So if I go back to virtual services here. And we don't have any virtual services, but we can go ahead and create a new one. By default, it's going to put in the IP address of the LoadMaster, the private IP address in Azure. And we'll just call this, apps, something like that. Very simple. And we'll go ahead and add this virtual service. Oh, I'm sorry, you know what? Let me delete this. I want to create it under 443. That would have been a problem. So let's go ahead and change this port to 443. And then again, we'll call it apps. And we'll go ahead and add that. And you can see now we're on 443. So there's a few settings we have to do through this virtual service. The first of which is we want to disable transparency. So the concept of transparency is sending the connection will come to the LoadMaster. The LoadMaster can actually send the source IP address of the client back to the real server. We don't want to do that. We want that connection to come back to the LoadMaster. So what's going to happen is any connections going to the real servers, or in this case, the PaaS, the web apps, are going to be coming from the IP address of the LoadMaster. So that's very important. That's again, it's enabled by default, and a lot of customers start having problems when they're deploying virtual services, and that's really the first thing that you want to make sure is not checked. So the SSL, we're going to go ahead and enable, and we get this warning saying no certificates. We've had that conversation already, and we're just going to use the temporary one until a valid certificate's issued. So we'll just hit OK on that. If there were real certificates, we can just go ahead and select it and drag it over and hit set certificate, and that would be all you would need to do. Actually, we'll go back into the advanced properties a little bit later after we create our content rules, because we're going to need to set those rules up in this VS. But in the meantime, let's go to real servers. And what we're going to do is we also have the option to, we could actually add the real servers here, but what we're going to do is we're going to add what's called a sub-VS. And we'll get into why that makes sense. So here we have this button to add sub-VS. So I'll create two, one for our web app and one for our Java. And I can go ahead and modify the sub-VS one. And this one will be called, we'll just call this web. We'll set that nickname just so we have a nickname we can identify it easy. Once again, under standard options, we'll have to uncheck that transparency box because, again, these are the sub-VSs. There's a lot of configuration you can do per sub-VS, so you can get very granular if you start having multiple either PaaS or a combination of IaaS. You can actually have specific settings for each one. So, for example, let's say one of these sub-VSs was IaaS and we had multiple servers that we were actually load balancing. We can set some of the persistence and scheduling on that particular sub-VS, while the web app, there really isn't any kind of persistence or scheduling because it's just one IP address, one service that we're hitting. Exactly. So there's no need to do any of these load balancing functions.
Right.
So again, the idea of being able to get very granular and have a combination of these different Azure services.
100%. And I would add that people, again, if you've got history with ADC products, I think lots of network admins have become highly dependent on that level of granularity, that level of control, yep, to be able to have the parent VS and the sub VSs to do all of this stuff. And again, that's a critical capability that we bring to bear to be able to maintain that consistency when they're in the Azure environment and have that level of granularity and control over what they're publishing.
Yep. So then we have this idea of the check parameters, right? We want to make sure that the application is up and healthy and before we try to send any traffic back to it. So here we're going to be actually doing offloading here. So we're going to be doing 443 into the LoadMaster and then be doing port 80 to the actual from the LoadMaster to the web app. So we're going to have the parameter being HTTP. Obviously, the port for HTTP is 80. And then we're going to also do send some custom headers as well. So for the web, we need to send the URL for web, the Azure website. So we're going to go into our web app URL. We're going to copy this URL, and we're going to go ahead and set that header. So as part of our health check, we can actually send back some custom headers to the real servers, or in this case, the platform.
And we support SSL checking there as well,
yes,
correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Which is a unique capability for us.
Absolutely, yep. So now what I can do is, now that I have my check parameters, I can go ahead and add my IP address for the web. So this, by the prereq that we did before of enabling non-real, non-local real servers, is the idea to have this checkbox. So once I check this box, you'll see this changes on the bottom here. So real server can only be on the following network, right? The 10.1.0. That's by default. But since we have that box, we can check that box, and it can say it can be on any network.
Yep.
So having that flexibility, we can just check that. We'll go and add the IP address for our web. We're again, port 80, and we'll add that real server.
And that also, I mean, when you think about hybrid scenarios, that capability is going to become important, because you may be publishing application services, VSs, on your local prem. You may want them in certain cases to refer to services that are running in the public cloud, and obviously those two don't live on the same network.
Yes, yep. Yeah, you're going to definitely need that in that scenario. So our web is complete. We'll go over and do our Java. So we'll name this one Java. Set the nickname. Standard options. We will uncheck that transparency. Port 80 for our checkpoint, our check port. And headers, once again, we'll send that host. And we'll copy the Java URL. Again, real easy when you have this worksheet to go back and forth and copy these things out of. So we have our check parameters complete here. We can go ahead and add the Java, quote unquote, real server. And that's been added. We can click back. We can go back to the main page here to view services. And anytime you make any changes, that revalidation has to happen in LoadMaster to make sure things are up. So if I click that, you'll see that both of our this happened to me the other time, and I think it was due to the there it goes. Okay, it was just doing a revalidation. So let's go into and start creating some of the content rules. So we have the VSs.
Maybe we'll just pause there just for a sec to make sure that everybody's caught up. We know it's a big data dump and a lot to do, especially if you weren't able to join us on the prep session. I'm sure there's some folks that might be scrambling now to get caught up.
Yeah, we definitely, because now we're going to get into these content rules, and these this it can get complicated, and I want to make sure everyone can really understand why we're creating these. It's really three different types of content rules that we need to create. One is matching rule, and then there's two modification rules, and we'll get into why we're doing it for this particular lab. You may not need these particular rules for your solution, but certainly give you an idea of some of the possibilities around these regex rules for.
Yeah. And remembering also, I'd say that at the end of the day, it's really all about the end user experience, right? So we're not going through these exercises to do some sort of complex, intelligent, delivery for the sake of it. It's so that when the end user approaches your application, your service, you can publish it under a single URL, right? Without the cloud app, or using multiple cloud app domains or other types of Azure domains. And there's not only an end user experience, there's also the reality of the way browsers work and, mm-hmm. Blockers and site blockers. And so it's really about making sure that end user experience is seamless. In the case of Unigo and Rudy specifically, they actually even found a benefit around search engine optimization, right? So what they wanted to do was they wanted to maintain that unigo.com URL consistently across all of their assets. And they were actually in a mode where they were acquisitive. They bought another company who had a completely different public domain. They didn't want to have one part of their college match service be one domain and the other part be the Unigo.com. So they put it all under the Unigo header, if you will, and then that actually afforded them a benefit of getting better rankings within search engines because they were able to put all of their effort and their marketing around Unigo.com instead of having multiple disparate domains.
Right. I mean, you do have the option in PaaS to the idea of bring your own domain.
Sure.
Right? So you can, here we're, apps.chemtechnologies.com. You can add that to the web app. But the idea is, what if you have multiple? If you're adding that same URL to, that same domain to all of these, you can't expect DNS to manage all this content switching. It just isn't going to work that
Absolutely.
Way. So, so the idea of bring your own domain is great if you have your whole solution based on one offering from PaaS, then you don't need the Loadmaster. But definitely, we're seeing more times than not is that for these solutions, there's multiple tiers and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
and lifecycle management too, I'd add just briefly, which is, as your environment gets more complicated and you're intelligently routing or delivering content from multiple sources, you're adding multiple websites, multiple applications. We found out again through Unigo that essentially they can do all kinds of interesting testing. So let's say one of the web apps gets revved and there's a new version. They're not sure if they want to go live. They can make a change in their content rules and allow a certain subset of folks to test that. If there's a problem with the app, they can very quickly roll it back by just making a change to the content rule, as opposed to having to go back at the code level on those servers. So the lifecycle management capabilities that you can enable, they may not be super obvious or intuitive at first glance, but again, we're seeing customers that are getting a lot of benefit from that perspective.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to go through this content matching or the content rules again a little bit slower and kind of explain a little bit why we're doing this. If I just went through and just created these things in the next 5 minutes, you'd really be wondering why are we doing this stuff and what is the purpose of it. So I'm certainly going to take it a little bit slower here. So what we can do is we can create a new rule, and we're going to reference that worksheet here. And these are the three different types of content rules we're going to be creating. A matching rule, we're going to modify the URL, and we're also going to replace the header on these, and we'll get into that. So the first one let's do is the content matching rules. So let's create the first one for, we'll call it web match. And then we have the rule type. Here we have different options, whether you want to add, delete, replace, modify, or just do a content matching. We're going to do the content matching. We're going to be using the regex, the regular expression. And we are going to do a match string to be anything slash web. So in our lab environment, we're using paths, right? So I keep referencing apps.chemtechnologies.com slash web, right, or slash Java. These will, we're going to be looking at that URL and saying, oh, okay, it's got slash web on it. We need to do something with that. So we've had a match on that string, and then we can do what we need to do. So we want to ignore case. We don't want to have any kind of case issues there. And then we have these options down here to set a flag or perform something if the flag is set. So we are going to set a flag on this. And the idea of the flag is that now we can trigger other rules based on this match. So once you get that traffic, we decrypt it on the Loadmaster. We see, oh, they're going to slash web. We're going to flag that rule, and then we're going to trigger the other rules that are associated with that flag. And we'll talk about, again, what those other rules do. So we go ahead and create that rule. And we will create another one for the Java. To our worksheet here. And this is what we were talking about before is trying to walk you through creating these rules and things. It's just so much easier to, whether you're doing a lab or whether you're doing it for production, it's just way easier to do it this way. And we'll ignore case once again. This one we're going to set a flag to 2. And you have the option to, again, create up to 9 flags. based on this kind of traffic. So we'll create that rule. So now we have our two content matching rules, so we're able to identify that traffic when it comes into the Loadmaster. Next, we need to create, let's first create the modify rule. Let's just go in order here. So if I create a new one, and this one we're going to call web remove. And instead, we're going to modify the URL on this one. You can see some of the changes here. And once again, we're going to do a match for that slash web. And we're going to modify the URL to be nothing, right? And the idea of why we're doing this, and as we were saying before, is that we don't have any, you know, we just spun up a default web app, right? It's got no paths, no structure or anything like that.
Right.
In the event that you actually had production and you had a virtual directory called web in your web app service, then you wouldn't have to do this, right? But for the purposes of this lab, we can modify. Now, you may even need to add, right? So you're modifying, you can add, you match a string and then add something to it. So the idea is you're very flexible and granular with what you're doing with these. So we'll go ahead and we set that flag. So we're only going to do it if the flag is set to 1, which is what we set the web to.
Right.
So we created that rule. And we'll have to go ahead and create one for Java as well. Change that to a modify URL. And now we're looking at slash Java. And the modified URL is the same. We're just kind of removing slash Java when we send that traffic to the web app.
Got it. And I assume that all of this state and configuration is saved in a as part of a Loadmaster backup.
Backup, yep.
Correct? Okay. I certainly wouldn't want to type it in again.
Okay, so now we have the content matching rules, which are setting our flag. And then we have our the modification rules for the modify URL, which are going to be triggered from these flags. So we'll just take a moment to
Let folks get those down. Again, if you have questions, please feel free to use the Q&A panel. We'll do our best to try to address them. Any other feedback would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, so let's move on here. And the last one we're going to do is we're going to replace the header name. So we're going to call this one web replace. And instead of, again, we're not doing, we're going to replace header. We're not going to modify, we're going to replace. And the field that we're going to replace is host. And because this is the URL, this Kemp lm11.cloudapp.net is the URL we're going to be using to access our solution. But as I was saying before, that apps.kemptechnologies.com, would most likely be that URL.
Right? Right.
That wouldn't really necessarily match the Loadmaster URL. The reason why we're using that is because the DNS record's already in public DNS, and we can just leverage that as part of it. But you wouldn't necessarily use the cloudapp.net as your production URL. It would be your custom domain.
Yep.
So we're going to match the that URL, and we're going to replace it when we send that traffic back to the web app with that, because the idea is, and let's just set that flag as 1. The idea is, since it's a platform as a service, it's a shared environment, right? So this URL, the AzureWebsites.net URL, is very, very important, because there's multiple websites running on that platform.
Yep.
So this is unique to the website that we deployed, and we need to make sure that traffic goes back. If we sent that traffic back to the web app as cloudapp.net, Kemp LM11. We're obviously going to get a page that cannot be found because that URL does not match what's in the offering.
Absolutely.
So we have to do this.
I think this also sort of, you know, thinking more along maybe folks who are either, you know, you work for a service provider or you're acting as a service provider. If you've got multi-tenant sort of scenarios, even within your own organization or across organizations, this type of granular control becomes critically important, right? Because you could be essentially looking after the traffic delivery for sites, services, and apps that span multiple entities. Mm-hmm. And we give you the ability to handle that all, again, through a centralized control point.
Yeah. I mean, just before we finish that last rule, to kind of build on that is, you know, the matching rules, right? We're looking at this pattern /Java/web. You can look at a pattern looking at the host name, right? So if you have customer1.kemptechnologies.com or customer2.kemptechnologies.com, you can do that kind of match, right, based on the URL. Absolutely. And then take action. We're doing, you know, directories, virtual directory kind of paths.
Correct.
To do our match. But you can really, you know, again, anything in the header you can look at to do that.
And again, this gives the person who's has the administrative responsibility over the networking piece to be able to do stuff more in a more sort of agile way than waiting for, no offense, you know, sometimes the web developers or the app developers to get through their sprints. Sometimes that takes a while. Right? And as everyone knows, you know, life goes on, things happen, things stop working, changes need to happen. You know, can really do things relatively quickly here. And if things don't work or there's some sort of an issue, it's very easy to roll back to what the previous state was.
Yep. So let's create that last replace rule. And this is Java replace. And we're going to replace the header. Header field will be host again. The same match string. And this time we're going to be replacing that with the Java. And we're going to be doing that to flag 2. So now we have all of our rules created, the 6 rules, in which case we are, again, we have our matching rules, we have our modify URL, which is kind of stripping that path out of the URL when we send it back to the service. And then we have the replace header, which is replacing that URL when it gets sent back to the service. So again, we have a match when it hits that service that there is a site called Kemp Java 1143 or Kemp Web 1143.
Yep.
So now that we have all of these rules, we need to apply them. All right, so...
Does that mean we're done with our handy dandy spreadsheet for
yes,
now?
Yes, okay. The spreadsheet we're finished with. We know the URL that we can obviously reference. This is the URL we're going to use, but we can come back and copy that if we want to use that and when we access it in our browser.
Great.
So let's go back to our rules. The first thing I'm going to do is modify the root VS. And under advanced properties, we have the header modification rules here. So if I show the header modification, we don't have any applied to this virtual service, but you can see we have them listed here. We have our 2 modifies and we have our 2 replaces. So at the root, we're gonna add the, all 4 of them. So we're gonna add the web remove, the Java remove, the web replace, and then finally the Java replace. And as you can see, you can promote and move these rules in a different order. For our lab environment, this is fine. It doesn't matter.
But there is some sort of priority that you can set.
Yes.
For certain scenarios.
It. Yep. If you have certain scenarios where you're triggering things and you need something to happen before something else, you can do that as well.
Perfect.
Yep. So we have all 4 of these. So your modification rule should look something like this, which has all of the 4 rules that we created. Now we need to set the content switching portion. So if we do see /web and we do see /Java, where do we send that? You know, we have those 2 sub VSs, but we need to identify, you know, which one. You know, we don't want to send, if it's /web, we don't want to send that to the Java one and vice versa. We don't want to send the Java/Java to the web. So what we can do is first we'll take a look down here as our sub VSs. So we have our web and our Java. If we enable this content switching, we'll see a little bit of a change down here, which activates these rules. So obviously there's some, that brings your attention here, that there needs to be some action here that you need to do when you enable content switching, is to add those content matching rules to our BS. So this was our web, right? So we have our two matching rules. We're going to add the web match, which is, again, looking at that slash web. And then we come down here to our Java, and we're going to add the Java match rule to this one. And you can add multiple content matching rules to these sub VSs. If you have multiple, you know, it's not just it can only be slash Java or slash web. You can have, you know, really multiple in there. If you have certain paths that need to go to, you know, or even you're going to need one for just the root, right? So anything, right. If you hit apps.chemtechnologies.com without any path, right, that has to go somewhere. So that you would obviously have one that's got a match rule that says if it's nothing, right, it's kind of a catch-all.
Right.
You want to send that over to maybe there's a third PaaS offering or IaaS, whatever it may be.
Right. Or you could also, in theory, protect that if you don't, if it was a scenario where you didn't want people going to the root of your website, let's
yes.
say, you
mm-hmm.
could just block access to that.
Right. Yeah. If there's no rule, it's gonna fail. Or you can, again, if they do hit that, you can direct them to a different.
Right.
And add, you know, slash Java or add, you know, do something like that.
Right.
Where if there's a match, then you're gonna take action on that. You're gonna maybe add a path to it. You know, modify okay. that. Okay. So we come back to our services, you know, everything is up. We've added our the content rules, the matching rules, as well as the modification rules. I think this is an IE problem. It just keeps, yeah, I think it's an IE problem. But anyhow, that's another
with the
day.
Status. Yeah.
it changes. It is up. So now what I can do is let's see if we have this working. So we have HTTPS because we're doing kemplm. Now, we're not going to be doing the 8443, which is our, we're going to do slash web. Now, we're getting in the certificate error because, again, we don't have that certificate. It's using the default.
Yep.
So if we can continue to that, we have our web app access. But you can see the URL is still accessing that kemplm11. So we're masking that we're actually hitting this web app with that AzureWebsites.net URL, but we're masking that with our custom domain.
Correct.
In this case, it's a cloud app, but
yeah,
it would be.
Exactly.
And the same thing goes for Java. If I hit slash Java, now we switch over to our Java web app, right? And again, it's being masked.
Yep.
So if we go to on our Loadmaster here, we have some stats, real-time stats. If we go to real servers, we'll see that within the last 60 seconds, we've had one hit to web and
right.
another hit to Java. So in real time, you could see, you know, again, if you have all these things, even at a glance from a a web admin, you know, what part of my site, I mean, you'd probably do some other analytics to find out where people are going. I mean,
sure.
This isn't going to be the basis of it. But at a glance, you can say, you know, everyone's hitting, you know, this part of the site because
yep.
we're doing that routing and that's really where all the traffic's going. So you'll see this, obviously, you know, we have one in one, but you know, this would obviously build out as a production site and you would have a list of all those different services there and you can understand really where your traffic is going. So from a monitoring and even troubleshooting, you know, this is great. You know,
yep.
you can actually go in there and see that stuff. So I just want to take a second for anyone that to catch up to make sure that everything is working in their environment.
Are we essentially at the close point now of the content?
Yeah,
switching?
The content switching is pretty much done.
Okay.
We've set up our rules, we've set up our VS, and we've applied those rules. So at this point, we have a working content switching lab environment. And now we're just going to kind of do a little, extra credit with the WAF.
Right. Case. I mean, I can, you know, even thinking sort of other scenarios and the granular control here, Again, I think it depends on which part of your IT team you work for, whether you're on the app dev side or more in the networking side. But even scenarios related to the Internet of Things, IoT, and you've just, you know, the growth in the number of devices that are going to be connecting back to, let's say, a service that you publish in Azure, you know, the ability to have that granular control to make those changes, you know, I think is extremely powerful. And then, to, again, to your point, to see where the traffic is, you know, just to get a snapshot of where the volume is. It's not comprehensive. It's not going to give you the ability to diagnose and troubleshoot everything, but at least you'll get a sense on where things are going.
Well, if you have to dig in deeper, you can, you know, go into some of our logging settings in here, and we have some debug options if you want to take a capture, right? You want to take a capture and open up in Wireshark to see, you know, what happened. You know,
right.
Someone's having whatever, some problems accessing parts of the website or websites. You know, you can get in there and see what the traffic actually looks like.
Right.
So being able to dig in at a packet level, you can really, you know, uncover that stuff. So again, added value on top of some of the things that Azure is offering is being able to get this kind of insight, which, you know, unfortunately, you can't in some cases. In other cases, there's some diagnostics in Azure which are very helpful.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes you need something like this.
Absolutely.
To even dig even deeper to find out, you know, what's going on with that issue that you're having.
Yeah, and I think especially true for, again, people who are in the process of making that journey, who have spent, you know, their career like we have in, you know, working in on-prem environments. You move to, you know, the public cloud, and you almost, you know, you're still sort of, you know, based on the way you were trained, you're reliant on these types of tools, and to try to figure out how to do it in a different way, or maybe in certain cases the capability is not there, can be a little bit scary, right? So this definitely provides a nice little cushion from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of logging based on what you're doing. There's some extended logging, you know, based on our ESP, and we could talk a little bit about that. You mentioned it in the presentation, some of that authentication stuff, pre-authentication. So let's talk a little bit about the web application firewall. So we have a few offerings with when it comes to WAF. First is that, you know, WAF is included by default with the Loadmaster in Azure, right? So you're going to get that. There's a few different offerings that we have. We have a subscription-based offering, which if you for vulnerabilities, if you, you know, the OWASP top 10, you know, you need DLP, cross-site scripting, all of these vulnerabilities that we hear about, we know about, that are out there, you can protect your application by download, you know, getting the subscription. It's going to be daily updates based on, you know, the current rule sets and things like that to protect your application. So, you know, that, you know, the value in that is, you know, I don't need to explain the value in, you know, protecting your application for those vulnerabilities. So if you certainly in here within your WAF settings, you could see those automated rule updates where we can kind of schedule that stuff when to install it and when downloading it and things like that, give you an update of when it was last updated to make sure that you have the latest rule set.
And it is important to emphasize, because I think there's been a little bit of confusion among some of our customers. We talk about the WAF being built in. Essentially, what's built in is the WAF engine, right? The ability for you to create custom rules, the ability for you to download some open source rules that are made available. But we have these commercial rule set offerings that Kurt just referred to. We sell those on a subscription basis. Right, so if you do want to have, and the example I always use just to sort of, you know, dumb it down a little bit, if you want to have the ongoing virus updates, right, for your virus checker, then you need to sign up for a subscription that we charge for. But there is some base capability for WAF that's built in. And maybe if you're more experienced and you have some other mechanism by which you can get the rule sets and you feel comfortable, then you don't need to buy the commercial rules. You can just sort of wing it, I guess, and protect yourself in the process.
Yeah, so it's based on, the engine's based on mod security. So there's a ton of things. The reference guide mod security is enormous, right? So all the different rules that you can create. You can, again, you get very creative with some of those things if you have very specific needs, right?
Yeah.
So in our case, we're going to show you just, again, it's just it's an example, right? It certainly isn't end-all be-all of WAF rules, but certainly enough to give you an idea of some possibilities and things that you may not have thought about, you know, kind of, again, outside of the box of the typical thought process of WAF, and, again, based on those vulnerabilities, which in their own right are just extremely important, right, for those vulnerabilities. So what I've done is I've actually already have the rule installed, but what you can do is based on the that download, right, that worksheet, and also had that WAF secure Java config, you can, you know, browse and select that config from your machine. Again, I've already downloaded it, so you can we have this config. You just select that and go ahead and add the rule set. And when you add the rule set, it'll, you know, obviously it'll do a check to make sure that rule set is compatible,
right? Valid, right?
Valid, yeah. Right? So you want to make sure it'll, you know, basically say line 4 is, you know, invalid and things like that. So it's a good thing, you know, it does that check to validate the rule set, make sure it's based on mod security and that it's a functioning rule set. And if I go ahead and download this, we'll take a look at it. So, like I said, it's a simple rule, actually based on actually 4 pieces of criteria. First, we're always looking at slash Java in this. You know, demo is we're looking to protect the Java web app. But it could just, it's really any kind of virtual directory. So it doesn't have to be a whole web app. It could be just a portion, yep, of the Java. You know, maybe it's some kind of reporting site or something like that you want to restrict to only from the corporate office. You don't want people running this, you know, from hotels or whatever it may be.
Yep.
So you want to protect it to a certain IP address. You were looking at this to say anything slash Java that's not from this IP address. And I just, you know, picked this IP address out of the sky and put it there. So we're going to deny that traffic. If it does match that IP address, then we're going to go ahead and allow that traffic. And then we may have to, you know, again, we want to restrict it only for business hours, because off hours we're running new reports and we don't want people to get, you know, invalid data or something like that.
Yep.
So we're going to restrict it, you know, between business hours. So 7 p.m. and 8 a.m. We're blocking access. So again, we have this rule set, again, looking at Java, and we're going to be logging this as denying off hours, and we're just setting the hours in there. And then finally, the last piece is weekends, right? So we want to make sure Saturday and Sunday, you know, we're not allowing access as well. Java. And we're going to basically put these two days in here for Saturday and Sunday, and we're going to deny access for weekend. So, again, this is kind of just a very simple rule, but it's kind of outside of what you would typically think of WAF. And I don't want to certainly don't want to downplay WAF as not being, you know, good for the vulnerabilities, because I mean that's really its primary purpose. But it's kind of difficult to demo those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
In this kind of environment. So this is a little bit easier to digest and. Man, it makes people think about, you know, what else can I do?
Yeah.
You know? And looking at that reference guide, you'll really get an idea of, you know, what the possibilities.
Right. And it's just part of, I think, of a broader security arsenal that we have within the product. Again, you know, with reverse proxy, mm-hmm. the edge security pack with the capabilities around pre-auth. There's lots of, in certain ways, there are ways to do, accomplish similar things using different capabilities, right? So you could use the reverse proxy in certain ways to block or to enable secure access. You could also be using the WAF if you're more comfortable. And if you're already using the WAF to protect your application, then it probably makes more sense to add a couple of rules to, mm-hmm. to do this types of business intelligence as opposed to maybe turning on the whole reverse proxy capability.
Yep. So what we can do now is we can go into the virtual service. And if I go ahead and modify this, I'm going to apply the WAF rule to the root, the main virtual service. But the idea is, since we have those sub VSs, if your rules, you know, require that it be applied to a sub VS, you can apply it to just the sub VS. You don't need to apply it to the root of the site. In this lab environment, since we're stripping that Java away at the root, right? We're stripping that, modifying that URL, and we're removing Java when we send it back to the sub VS. If I put this rule on the sub VS, it's not going to see Java, so it won't work. So
right.
In this case, we're going to put it on the root, but it doesn't have to be. You can, again, with those sub VSs, if you look into, if I modify a sub VS, you'll see I have the WAF options here too. So I could apply it there if the solution required it. But here I am on the root apps. I can go ahead and enable this, and I can go ahead and do block mode. We can, process responses if we want to. And here we have custom rule, which again, the one that we created. But if you were doing the subscription, you'd have all of these rules that were applications specific and things like that, that you can actually take and drag over and assign for that particular virtual service or sub virtual service.
Yeah. And that's an important point that there's, there is a set of vulnerability rules, the OWASP rules, that are really about blocking the top 10 sort of threats. The commercial rule set also contains application specific mm-hmm. rules that are constantly added to. So if you're dealing with SAP, you're dealing with Oracle applications, whatever it may be, there are specific sets of rules that you get that are, I think, do obviously cover the range of vulnerability challenges, but also give you a sense of how you could actually, a framework to work from to do some of these custom things where maybe you want to block access to certain parts of the app, from a business rule or business logic perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I can do is just assign that rule into the assign rules here. And we'll wait for that to refresh. Let's close this down. Again, 3 seconds. That revalidation always has to happen. So now if I go to Kemp HTTPS. Let me start again. mm-hmm. HTTPS, Kemp.
And we're not going to go to the WUI, right?
Right. Just yep. And we're going to do /web. And we're going to continue that. So the web is still up, right? We didn't. Our rules didn't have any kind of effect. We want to make sure that the web app is up all the time. Correct. We don't want to block any access to that. Now, if I go to Java, and now we're getting that declined. Right, so we're blocking access to that particular part of the site. And again, in this case, we're blocking access to that whole sub VS, but it could just be a subset.
Right.
So we can get very very creative again, talking about the creativity of the regex rules for the content switching, but also with the mod security rules within the WAF. So hopefully just kind of, just kind of bring some ideas based on the solutions that people are looking to put out in Azure and may think I can't do it,
right? Exactly,
because of X, Y, or Z, and you start thinking, well, maybe there's something here, and you start going through the reference guide and things like that, and you start putting together these solutions to get you into the cloud.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's the whole purpose of this whole effort, the lab. The broader efforts that we've done with Microsoft just to get the word out, to make sure that people know that this stuff is there and that other companies who may be a little bit further ahead of you on your cloud journey, some of the challenges that they're running into and how they're solving these problems.
Yep.
So I think we also have, but I'm not sure, there may be a delay. There's also some logging capabilities.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, we can do logging as well.
Okay. Sure if it was going to be that delay until that block showed up in our.
Yeah, let's take a look. So if I go under the, actually look at system logs, and I can look at the event logs here. Here we have an entry, right? So this is the 19th, which is today.
Right.
This is some testing that I was doing the other day on the 13th. But you can see here we have the mod security access denied. Right, so it's matching. First, it's showing the IP address that we're coming from.
Right. Right?
So where's the traffic coming from? Why did it get denied? We're on this 167, and we're looking for that.
Right.
So in that case, we're blocking that, and it's because of an invalid IP address. Now, if it was a match, and maybe we did it, we were here, 10 o'clock at night, then it would be logging that the reason why it. Was denied because of the hour.
As being out of business hours, right. As opposed to not being from a particular IP
yep.
address.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
Great.
So, yeah, having that logging, I mean, when you're talking about security, if you're not logging it, what's the purpose?
Right? Yeah.
You gotta be logging it to be able to follow up and, again, adjust if need be in some cases.
Right. Great. So I think in terms of what we have prepared to demo, that covers the bulk of it. We're certainly, interested if you have questions, whether on my section about the overall product set, the solutions, the use cases, the types of applications that we're seeing folks who are working with LoadMaster, what those applications are that they're trying to publish in Azure, some of the hybrid scenarios, happy to speak about that. Kurt is certainly more than happy to go into some depth on specific questions that you have around the lab. So why don't we transition now into the Q&A section, and we can talk about a little bit of what's on your mind. So let's see here. It looks like we have a couple coming in. What if my website requires a username and password? Does that matter?
Yeah, so when we talked about that before with the pre-authentication. So we have the concept of our Edge Security Pack, our ESP. And to kind of give a little bit of background on ESP, that was we kind of put that out in the TMG, right? So the Threat Management Gateway retirement, right? So that kind of went away, there was that void for people that needed that reverse proxy and that extra layer of security of doing the pre-auth and things like that. So we've added the Edge Security Pack for that purpose. But I mean, it's really the amount it's being used for all of these different use cases, maybe not just around the TMG, but other use cases, it's been incredible. So what you can do, and I can, since I still have the desktop up, I can kind of show you, we have this concept of manage SSO, where I can create an SSO domain, and we have different authentication protocols. So whether it's LDAP, you're going against Active Directory, maybe you have some domain controllers deployed, or using Azure Active Directory with the domain services, yep, and being able to tie directly into the domain services of Active Directory in Azure, we can do that and authenticate users, certificates, some RSA, Radius, right? So just actually talking about Radius for a second, the concept of using the Azure multi-factor authentication. So the Azure multi-factor authentication, which is, love this kind of stuff, is that when you're using Azure multi-factor authentication, you can deploy an MFA server, and that MFA server actually acts as a Radius server. So we can actually tie directly into that Radius component of MFA and do multi-factor authentication using Azure MFA. Again, this was just something that just worked, which is great.
Yeah.
when that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a few configurations where you want to set some timeouts. We have some timeout settings for that because, again, the idea of the multi-factor authentication in Azure is that you're using your smartphone to do that authentication. So the idea of authenticating the communication between the server and then the cloud and then the communication to the phone and then right, how quick someone is on the phone to accept that second factor, that takes some time, and we want to make sure we don't have any timeout issues. So we have that setting in there as well, so we can leverage that MFA. And as we were talking about before, within our virtual services, whether we want to enable the ESP right at the root, right? So we can enable ESP here, which is going to give us the ability to select that authentication, right? So we can set it to do, again, whether it be forms-based, right? You're going to present a form for the user, which can be, customizable to, yep, to the company, client NTLM, and then you just select that domain that we just were looking at where you would create it. And then there's some, allowing certain hosts, right? So you're restricting it to be a particular host and a particular path if you're talking about virtual directories. So, and then also, since we're doing the pre-authentication, is that we can actually do permitted groups. So if you have Active Directory groups, we're going to make sure that user is a member of that group before we even pass that traffic back to the real server or the offering, the PaaS offering.
Great.
And whether you do it on the root VS or, as we were talking about with WAF, you can drill into the sub VS and maybe only have that pre-authentication on a certain part of the site. So there's, again, being able to get that granular is great.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Looks like a question here about the compression and caching that we do with LoadMaster.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, doing compression caching, we have some options here under this configuration. We can, you know, set the cache size, so we can, you know, maybe some file extensions that should not be cached, right? So we can put some settings in there to not cache certain files, and then the compression, same thing, setting which ones should not be cached, or sorry, compressed in that case, and then we can go ahead and apply them to the virtual service. So again, very configurable, and we also, as you can see here, we have some intrusion detection, which is also based on a snort, which you can actually set up some intrusion detection as well.
Great. All right, I think we have time for one more. It looks like there is a question here about just, you mentioned that you can do high availability in Azure with LoadMaster, but maybe just expanding on how that works, I guess, at a high level.
So the idea with within Azure high availability, it's an active-passive configuration, right? So I think you had mentioned it before in the presentation that we're actually leveraging the Azure load balancer for this, because just the idea of the native clustering and things like that in Azure is very difficult to do. So we're leveraging the Azure load balancer to send the traffic to the LoadMaster that's available. So we can, under the system configuration, we have this option of Azure HA, where we can go in and we can set it being the primary or secondary, and getting that connection between them. And again, it's an active-passive. But yeah, it's no problem at all. Yeah.
Great. And we've
got the high availability, then that's what you're going to need to do.
Yeah, and we have that fully, that's documented on our website, through the support website,
yes.
Which is, I guess, a good point also to mention that there's lots and lots of documentation that Kurt and others on the team have worked on diligently. You know, go to support.chemtechnologies.com and you can find sort of more general overviews of just deploying LoadMaster in Azure, how to set up HA. We've got some videos that walk through the basic configuration of HA as well, and then some more advanced scenarios about doing SharePoint failover to the cloud. So really have been sort of churning out that content for almost a year at this point. So I think at this point we'll switch back to the final slide here. And so I just want to mention that as in appreciation of you taking the time, we know it's a lot of time out of your schedule to spend with us today. It's a special offer essentially for the attendees today for a 30-minute consultation with one of our Azure technical specialists. And you can use that for anything you like. You know, if you've got pre-sales or pre-deployment questions, things that maybe spark some interest through Kurt's lab today that you want to know more about, you can certainly do that. If you're in the middle of a deployment, let's say, of a free LoadMaster and you're running into some issues, you know, happy to have you use the time for that, whatever makes most sense. We really want to help you in your journey to the Azure cloud. So if you'd like to take advantage of that, you can reach out to me. Contact information is there on the slide. And don't hesitate to ping us. I think that's probably about it. In terms of what's coming up next, again, I did mention the fact if you were a bit intrigued by Rudy at Unigo's story, we're going to be doing an Infopedia session on that in early June. If you want more information, you know, ping me. I can send you the invite for that. Registration is live now. And we're looking forward to a whole host of continued joint marketing efforts that we'll be doing with Microsoft and the Azure team specifically. So on behalf of myself, Kurt, and the production team here at Microsoft, thank you so much for joining. We hope it was valuable, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
Great. Thank you so much for attending today's event, Azure Hands-On Event with Microsoft and Kemp, and a very special thank you to both of our presenters. This concludes today's session. You may now disconnect.